Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to the Hard Hits podcast. I'm your host, Derek Flex Felix. It is a special podcast here, sports podcast, covering the local scene here in the New York City, New Jersey area. It's been a while since I've actually done one of these podcasts, but it's actually nice to actually get back into the rhythm after a couple of weeks off. So, what's on my mind, actually? A couple of different things, actually. So I want to start off with the Cy Young, which was awarded on Tuesday. As a matter of fact, with both Jacob DeGrom of the New York Mets and Blake Snell of the Tampa Rays winning the awards for each league. I want to congratulate Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom had a unbelievable year for the New York Mets. As you know, the New York Mets, they were not a good team, that's for sure. He certainly did not give Jacob DeGrom much run support throughout the year. And DeGrom pitched unbelievably for the New York Mets, and he certainly was deserving and is deserving. 1.70 ERA with only 10 wins, and he had a 10.0 WAR, wins above replacement. Just a fantastic year, the streak where he allowed three runs or fewer. I think that was like 29 consecutive starts, 269 strikeouts, 46 walks, only 10 home runs given up. He was sensational throughout the year. He threw a career-high 217 innings, allowed only 152 hits, 41 earned runs. And he went from giving up 28 home runs in an off 2017 to giving up only 10 home runs. And the 269 strikeouts were a career best as well. And congratulations to Jacob DeGrom on just a remarkable season. And he gets 29 out of 30 first place votes. It is hard to believe that it wasn't unanimous. And only one vote for Max Scherzer was the only first-place vote that he did not get. And I think the surprising thing to me, at least, is that it didn't come from somebody in Washington. As a matter of fact, and it didn't even come from somebody located whose address is located somewhere in Clifton, New Jersey, either, in the mean streets. No, came from actually a writer in San Diego, actually. So, very surprising, obviously, that this would happen, but there's always at least one voter that, you know, doesn't want to go along or wants to just I have to be different. So, and well, the one writer I may as well reveal it was a San Diego writer, and apparently made a guest appearance on the Steve Summers show on WFAN in New York City on Sports Radio 66, 101.9 FM. San Diego writer John Massey is the one who made the one deciding vote. Well, the one not deciding vote, but the one vote, first place vote for Max Scherzer. Max Scherzer is a phenomenal pitcher, obviously, with the Cy Youngs that he's won. He certainly has been a terrific pitcher for a long time and had been the best pitcher going. And you could still say that he lays claim to that throne. But Jacob DeGrom was almost like a full run better than him this year. And it was a year where Cy DeGrom deserved to win. It didn't matter how many wins he got. So maybe this writer from San Diego just decided he'd rather vote for the guy who won 18 games. And Scherzer, for the first time in his career, in his illustrious career, struck out over 300 hitters. Actually, struck out 300 on the nail, actually. His last start got him there. And he did have a 2.53 ERA. The innings are very similar, 222 thirds, 150 hits. Gave up more home runs, 23 home runs. He is a power pitcher, 51 walks, 300 strikeouts. And look, Dollar Max is, really Dollar Max is a great pitcher. There's no question about that. He had won the last two Cy Youngs, and he has three total. But this was DeGrom's year. And DeGrom finishing only with 10 wins for the New York Mets. They had to get that 10th win in his last start, where they talk about after the eighth inning, where he had dominated. With the shutout innings, it's not a disrespect to Max Scherzer and what he's been able to accomplish in his career. It is a nod to how remarkable, I think, that how remarkable Jacob DeGrom was. As a matter of fact, Scherzer actually finished with a 9.5 wins above replacement. You know, the total breakdown, and we're going to get to that in a second. Aaron Nola, who also had an excellent year for the Philadelphia Phillies, he finished a distant third. The ace of the Philadelphia Phillies finished a distant third. And only in his third year, second full year, won 17 games. He had a 10.0 wins above replacement as well and had a better ERA than Scherzer. 17-6 for the Phillies, 2.37 ERA, 212 and a third, 149 hits, 17 home runs, 58 walks, 224 strikeouts. So here's the my question would be, how come Nola didn't receive more votes, or how come the votes between him and Scherzer were as close together? I think that Nola, you could have made a case for Nola finishing second in this vote, but they went with Scherzer and 300 strikeouts. Maybe the fact that he had the 300 strikeouts was part of it, but I never really understand, you know, what the criteria is on the breakdown. If it's just, you know, you're looking at certain things, but I mean, it was pretty no brainer for Mr. DeGrom to finally the Cy Young Award, and so a great job by most of the writers. There's always at least one, DeGrom wins it. Scherzer finishes second. Aaron Nola third. Kyle Freeland from the Colorado Rockies was fourth. And the surprising Aussie, like Nicholas from the Cards, who had a really good year for them, was fifth. You know, my you know, if there is one thing that I don't understand, and I know the guy is not, you know, the most well-liked guy, but I'm not understanding how Josh Hader did not finish in the top five. I think Josh Hader certainly was worthy of finishing at least fifth in that top five. But for the because he was so dominant out of the bullpen for the Brewers and so valuable, and I think we saw that with the Brewers until they used him too early, and you saw what happened to them against the Dodgers in that Game 7. Anyway, congratulations to Jacob DeGrom. Jacob DeGrom, first career is 55 wins up and 41 down with a 2.67 ERA. He has 1,000 strikeouts on the nail with 897-plus innings pitched. And 27.2 was above replacement. I think Scherzer is twice that. So he's been around a lot longer, obviously, than Mr. DeGrom. So Jacob DeGrom joining the likes of Tom Seaver, Dwight Gooden, and his special 1985, which I still think ranks the best. It is the best. 24-4. What was he? 24-4 with the 1.54 ERA. I still think that's the best one. In 85, and then R.A. Dickey. People forget about R.A. Dickey, but he did win the Cy Young in 2012 before getting traded. And the Mets able to steal Noah Syndergaard, who is still very much a part of the rotation. So, and a guy that certainly maybe he'll be a future Cy Young Award winner if he can get back to 100% full strength. Noah Syndergaard, a guy that I really like a lot, and has proven to be excellent. So, the previous lowest total victory number was Tim Lincecum, and that's what he repeated in 2009 for the Giants, 15 wins and 7 up down. I did not think that he would actually win it that year, but he did repeat. I thought they would actually give it to somebody else. Interesting to note here, and I was reading this along my notes, first time since 2010 that Clayton Kershaw was not part of the list and did not receive a vote. So kind of a sad thing, because you know, when you think about Clayton Kershaw, and you think about and what he's been able to accomplish in his career. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, maybe. Of course, exactly. He can't stay healthy. He's on the way down. But DeGrom was Rookie of the Year in 2014. Now he's got a Cy Young to go with it, man. That's a pretty cool thing to do for Adolfo Valenzuela. He was the only guy to win Rookie of the Year and sweep the AL Cy Young in 1981 for the Dodgers. He joins Seaver, Gooden, Don Newcomb, Rick Sutcliffe, and Justin Verlander. So, that's your Cy Young Award winner. Actually, you know what? Why don't we? Actually, this is the total ballot. Okay, so the total ballot was 29 for the ground first place, one first place for Scherzer, and then it was one for the ground second with San Diego Ryder, 29 second for Max Scherzer, 27 third place votes for Aaron Nola, 2 votes for third place for Kyle Freeland, who was a very good pitcher for the Rockies. And Miles Mikolas, I said Mike before, that's really Miles from the Aussie, 1 third place vote. So a little bit of cooking there. Fourth place votes, Kyle Freeland with 17 leading the way. Patrick Corbin will be a much bandied about starting pitcher, a headliner in the free agency, a guy the New York Yankees are going to be looking at, along with Corey Cooper, who could be on the move with the Indians looking to trade him. By the way, Josh Hader, in case you're wondering, he finishes a distant, I'll just say it again, he is a distant 7th, actually. So, I mean, it was actually DeGrom, Scherzer, Nola with 86 points, Scherzer with 123, Kyle Freeland, 49, Patrick Corbin did finish in the top 5, and Mikolas finished 6th. So, 23 for Corbin, 13 for Mikolas, and Hader only got 1 fourth place vote and 2 fifth place votes and totaled 4. The other pitchers, Mike Faldonowicz, real good pitcher for the Braves. Late bloomer there, came over for the Astros. A fourth place vote, a fifth place vote for 3 points. And John Lester somehow got a fourth place vote. John Lester is a very good pitcher, but I don't know how he got a fourth place vote. He gets 2 points for his fourth place vote. I definitely think Josh Hader should have gotten. I think Josh Hader could have gotten some third, could have gotten some fourth place votes. But I think he could have gotten more fourth place votes than he got, than he received. Just for how valuable he was, I think he should have finished in the top five. That's just my take on it here on the Hard Hits Network. But congratulations to everybody there. And, of course, this is DeGrom. Congratulations to him. Cy DeGrom it is. And a special day for Mr. DeGrom. Now, the AL was much closer. So I may as well quickly talk about Blake Snell winning the award. And Blake Snell winning that Cy Young Award. He edges out Justin Verlander, who, of course, has won the award before. Second ever Tampa Ray to ever win the award. David Price, yes. David Price, who redeemed himself in the postseason with the big postseason and shutting down the Dodgers and really silencing the critics. This is kind of the year of redemption for him. David Price there for the Red Sox with their fourth World Series championship since 2004, which I don't like to talk about, and I kind of didn't really acknowledge in my last broadcast, where I was kind of joking around about the world basically being over. We played the Eddie clip there with the sun will come out tomorrow. Blake Snell, though, is a very deserving Cy Young Award winner, a guy that also had under a 2 ERA, and he really, really won this award in that final month. He was hittable in that final month, and he was terrific, and he took over. The fact that he had to edge out Verlander, it doesn't really sit well with me. You know, I know Verlander struck out a lot more batters, but I just don't see how this was so close. Blake Snell with 17 first-place votes to Verlander's 13th. And Blake Snell got 11 second-place votes. Verlander got 13 second-place votes. Third-place votes, two for Blake Snell, so that totaled his 30. Verlander received 3 third-place votes and 1 fourth-place vote. The points were 169 to 154. By the way, and you have to remember that you had Corey Kluber in this race as well, and 4 second-place votes going to Corey Kluber. First, I want to say one thing here. And Chris Sale, by the way, also received 2, even though he got hurt. The fact that there are 2 writers here that thought Blake Snell was the 3rd best pitcher in the American League, I think that they were either living on a rock, living in a cave, or just completely lost. If you didn't vote Blake Snell first, you had to vote him second. All right? And if you want to go Verlander, you want to go Kluber, go ahead. If Chris Sale had stayed healthy, it would have been Chris Sale versus Blake Snell and Justin Verlander, and it would have been an even closer vote. Kluber gets those votes and winds up with 71 points because of his consistency. Chris Sale gets 59 fourth place votes, 12 for Chris Sale, 12 third place votes for Corey Kluber, 8 third place votes for Chris Sale. All right, you're rounding out your top 5 would be Gerrit Cole. That's excellent Cole right there. Trevor Bauer, don't forget about him. He finished a distant 6 with 13 points. He got 1 third place vote. Trevor Bauer was having a great year. Finishing 7th and 8th, relievers. Blake Treinen, who was excellent for the A's, and Edwin Diaz, who led 58 or 59 games. So I'm glad that those guys got, I'm glad that Treinen got some love, and I'm glad that Edwin Diaz got 4 points as well for some votes. Luis Severino actually received a 5th place vote. If it had just been on the first half, Luis Severino would have finished first. I don't even think Severino deserves any votes, to be honest, based on how bad he was in the second half. They do give you the breakdown and everything. And from Baltimore, David Ginsburg decided Verlander was better, and he gave Verlander the nod over Snell. Let's see who else took Verlander. James Fegan from The Athletic in Chicago went Verlander, Snell. Paul Sullivan went Snell, Kluber in Chicago, Chicago Tribune. Verlander, Kluber, Verlander, Snell. Verlander, Kluber, Jim Ingram, the Elira Chronicle in Cleveland. So Blake Snell, that's a little bit of a bias to me, taking Verlander and Kluber over Snell from Cleveland. Yeah, a little bit of favoritism to Kluber. Okay, maybe. And Kluber, of course, the two-time Cy Young Award winner. Detroit Free Press, Anthony Fenich, Chris Muskowski from Detroit News, and Christy Regan from the Houston, the Associated Press in Houston, MLB.com, Richard Justice from Houston. They all went Verlander first and Snell second. So a little bit of favoritism towards Verlander from where he used to pitch and from where he currently does pitch in Houston. The guys from Kansas City, too, also went Verlander first and Snell second. So interesting enough. Tim Brown also went Verlander from Yahoo Sports. Can I just ask one question? Like, Blake Snell won like 20. Did not Blake Snell not like win like 21 or 20, 21 games, I think? With like, and what was his ERA? Wasn't it like almost like to Jacob DeGrom level? I want to compare the two guys. Look, I know that Verlander had a terrific year. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from Justin Verlander. And, you know, if you listen to the show, you know I don't really like Justin Verlander, but maybe it's just the fact that he just destroyed the Yankees last year. I don't know. Something about him that just rubs me the wrong way. And, you know, I don't like to, but, you know, I do like him as a pitcher. I mean, I certainly respect what he's been able to accomplish on the mound. I just don't understand how you could vote Verlander over Snell. Based on what Blake Snell was able to accomplish in his second full year, or third full year. So why don't we look, let's take a quick look here at the two guys. I think that's the fairest way to do it, is to look, you know, look into the stats. I mean, he went 21-5 with a 1.89 ERA. What more could he have done? That is a terrific year. On a team that was expected to know. By the way, he only had 11 wins in his first two seasons. He had a 7.5 with above replacement and 31 starts, 180 innings. All right, so he didn't throw as many innings as Verlander, obviously, but only allowed 112 hits. Only 38 of his 41 were earned, 16 home runs, 64 walks, 221 Ks, and 180 and two-thirds. So, all right, so now when we go to Verlander, you're going to notice, of course, the strikeouts are going to be bigger. The innings pitched are going to be bigger as well. And I think maybe that's why Verlander got as many votes as he did. Justin Verlander's winter barber placement was 6.3. So it wasn't as high. So 7.5 for Snell to 6.3. By the way, Verlander finished 16-9, so he had five less wins. He finished with a 2.52 ERA. So the ERA obviously is higher. Five fewer wins. And Verlander kind of tailed off at the end. He pitched in three more games, 34 starts. Verlander is a horse, as you know. 214 innings. So that's 32 more innings. 156 hits, 60 earned, the 63 runs against him, 20 home runs. Yeah, I mean, that's what power pitchers do. They will give up home runs. But only 37 walks, 290 strikeouts. Although, look, I love the strikeouts. I mean, he's a great strikeout pitcher. He certainly has redeemed himself. Although it's kind of odd how he just became such a dominant guy after he kind of went through some struggles with Detroit until the final year, that 1 year in 2016, where he was turning around that big second half. Yeah, I just don't see how the vote should have been that close. But, you know, Justin Verlander is a great pitcher. Justin Verlander has been a Cy Young winner. Yeah, amazingly enough, he's only won one Cy Young. He's been a runner-up now. This is the third time that he's been runner-up. Well, that's interesting. I thought he actually won more. So he's been a runner-up three times now. That's interesting. So that's your AL. Was there anybody, is there anybody that I would have also put in, maybe considered throwing a vote for? Well, I wouldn't have put a vote in for Luis Severino after how bad he finished. You know who I would have actually considered voting for? As a last resort, I would have thrown a vote for for Dellin Betances. Dellin Betances was so valuable for the Yankees. I know he gave up 7 home runs, but the strikeouts, the innings pitched, the strikeouts per inning, 215 Ks in the 66 and two-thirds. He also saved a few games and he gave the Yankees a lot. He wasn't as dominant as here, but the 2.70 ERA, but and then went to the loss 4-6. But yeah, he's had better years. But I thought Betances was awesome this year. He was the best Yankee relief pitcher, and a guy maybe worthy of a mention. So I'm going to give him a mention. I think he deserved a little bit of a mention. All right, a couple more things that I do want to get to. Switch from baseball to hockey, and then we'll do a little bit on basketball, and that will be the show. Just want to comment a little bit on the New York Rangers here as you're listening to this Hard Hits podcast. Sports podcast with Derek Felix. And the Rangers have been a nice, pleasant surprise. They started off and they struggled. They couldn't score goals in the beginning, and David Quinn was trying to find his way, as a first-year coach has to when he's coming from the NCAA. It looked like it was just going to be they were going to be awful, and it was just going to be a rough year. But ever since they lost, they had a terrible loss to the Hawks, and they lost to the Kings. It looked like it was going to just be an awful road trip. But the one thing about David Quinn that I love about him compared to Alain Villa, who had a lot of success here until what happened the last year and a half, whatever, even against Ottawa, he makes players accountable. He is not afraid to call players out, to bench players, and I mean, he even scratched Pavel Buchnevich 3 different times. And Lane Vino, for all the criticism he received, he only scratched Buchnevich once last year. And of course, people were complaining. But when you listen to the way he talks and the way he explained it, how clear he was, he just didn't feel like Buchnevich was giving the kind of effort he expected. He knew about the talent level of Buchnevich, but he wanted to see. He wants to see more effort, more grit, more of that determination getting inside. And the way Buchnevich responded to that benching and the way he came back in the last 5 games with the 2 goals and the 2 assists and the way he was able to score and set up plays and even playing more physical. Yeah, it's too bad that he got hurt, that he's going to miss in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And it's certainly going to be tough without him. They were able to win the overnight, squeezed one out against the remarkable Calder favorite, Elias Pettersson, who they held off the score sheet. And I just like the way he handles this team. He's not afraid to make examples of guys. Even Kevin Shattenkirk had to sit out a game and watch a little bit, and Shattenkirk's still struggling. I don't know if that's due to the surgery or not, but he's certainly underperforming. Neil Pionk had to sit out, and Neil Pionk's become a very important player. Listen to the rest of our podcast as I get a little more hockey. All right, so this is the overtime segment. Derek Felix on the Hard Hits podcast. I talked a lot about Cy Young and Cy DeGrom getting 29 out of 30 votes. Max Scherzer finishing a distant second, and Aaron Nola finishing third in the NL. And in the American League, it was Blake Snell winning over Justin Verlander by only 15 points, 17 first place votes, 13, and he should have won by more. And no disrespect to Justin Verlander, but that he definitely should have won by more. All right, and Corey Kluber was third. Back on the Rangers, which I'm touching on, and the fact that David Quinn's not afraid to sit guys out. He sat out Vlad Mesnikov a couple of times, and you watch Mesnikov now. You watch the way he skates. You know, I talked about Buchnevich and his improvement, and it sucks that he got hurt. He looked like he was finally getting it, and now he's out with the broken thumb. When he didn't take that over, when he didn't take a shift in overtime over the week, I knew something was wrong because he definitely would have been out there, especially over Ryan Spooner, who's just been a $4 million waste of space. You could see why the Bruins gave up on him and just threw him in that trade for Rick Nash, which could still turn out to be a pretty good deal if a couple of those young players pan out. I hope so. At least what they are seeing, they're seeing some good results from Brett Howden, who was one of the pieces that the Rangers and Jeff Gordon was able to pry back from Tampa Bay in a trade where he traded away both Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller and got back Brett Howden and Libor Hajek. And Libor Hajek better be worth it because I really felt like they should have needed to get back a guy that was more of a top prospect for the, they needed Cal Foote in that trade. That's how I feel about it. And maybe the Erik Karlsson almost going to Tampa Bay was a factor, but Tampa Bay did not give up as much as they should have. And there was draft picks also, but still, Brett Howden at least is paying dividends. He scores the game winning goal the other night on a kind of a broken play. And Jimmy Vesey, here's another guy who's really improved. I always felt under Elaine Vigneault, Vigneault did not know what to do with Vesey. Vesey got off to a good start his rookie year and was scored goals in the beginning of the year by going to the front of the net. Vesey played good in the playoffs the one year where he battled hard and was really tough. And you were like, you know what, this guy's a classic North American player. But last year he kind of got lost in the shuffle while everybody was complaining about Buchnevich, who spent a lot of the time, you know, playing with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider on that KZB line, but there were times where Vigneault, you know, had Buchnevich on a fourth, third, or fourth line, and nobody could understand why. It's because, you know, Vigneault wasn't stupid about it. It's just that he sort of said things that I saw of Buchnevich that at times he didn't always want to take the hits, didn't always want to make the right play defensively, and that's why Quinn benched him. And I love the way Buchnevich responded. Jimmy Vesey is a guy who gives good effort, but he wasn't always consistent. He struggled at the preseason this year until the last couple of games. But you watch Vesey, you watch the effort. He's been in the top nine all year, and you can see why. First off, there's familiarity. Quinn knows Jimmy Vesey. Jimmy Vesey played for Hartford. Quinn coached for BU. He knows Vesey. He knows how to use him. And Hersey started him with Kevin Hayes, and I wasn't sure that was a match. I mean, it wasn't really a great match, but you saw the work that from VC, and VC probably could have a lot more goals. If he had better hands, he could probably have about 12 goals instead of the 6 goals that he has. But VC is producing, you know, so far. He's got 11 points, and he's really improved, and I like the fact that it seems like he's found the right place for him, which is with Brett Howden and with Jesper Fast on a beautiful third line, a hardworking, gritty third line, two-way line that just gives great effort all the time. So that's really worked out. Now, Filippito is a classic case. Filippito is 19 years old. He's the youngest player on the team, and he's one of the youngest players in the NHL aside from NHL freshmen. One thing I'm going to say about Filippito is there definitely is ability. You see the skating. You see the creativity with him when he's out there. He didn't know how to use him at first because he hasn't scratched him at all. So he likes what he sees from Filippito. And that's why they're going to burn. They've already burnt the first year off on the entry level in the ELC, entry level contract, where you have to, if they had only played him 9 games, they could actually push it to another year. Something they still have to decide on Elias Anderson, who I think is going to make a case to stay. We'll see because of his effort level. especially when you look at Brian Spooner. But that all depends on the coach. It depends on the organization and what they think is best for Leo Sanderson, who was basically a point per game at Hartford, 12 points in the 14 games, including a shorthanded goal. Tino hadn't been scoring. He hadn't been able to score a goal. He had become a close. And you just felt like he was going to finally break through. You were hoping for it, but he was centering the fourth line because they, you know, after trying him out on the wing, the coach wanted to keep him at center. So he had him on the fourth line, centering Cody McLeod, who has been, you know, he's been kind of a spark plug for this team. When you look at the fight that he had, the team was basically sleepwalking against the Canucks, down 1-0, and they were almost fell behind by 2 until he had that fight with Archibald. And there's been a couple of instances where McLeod has actually had been able to wake up his team, and that's why he stays on the roster. And I'm not saying he should be playing every night; he shouldn't. But you know, Cody is physical. Cody works hard, and that's, you know, he's the same kind of player that Tanner Glass is. You know, he's not going to put up any points, but you know, if you need that team toughness, if you need that wake up call, he can do that for you. And that's what he's a veteran. He's not going to be here long term. There's a lot of guys that aren't going to be here long term. But I think that Cody McLeod deserves some credit for that fight. He won the fight, too. And the team was able, they got a little bit of a break. They got a little bit of a break with Delzato hitting like three different posts on one shot on both ends. But they woke up after that. And Hedl was able to score on the power play. He got moved up. He went from the fourth line to the first line with Zibanejad and the Mesnikov. And the coach finally did what I was asking for, where, you know, it's time to move him up and put Spooner on the fourth line. And he did. And then he bumped Hedl up to the power play. And a real smart shot there by Neil Pionk. Another guy who's performed really well. He plays a lot of minutes, plays 22 minutes basically a night, plays power play. 6 power play assist or power Pionk with a good shot with Kreider screening Chris Kreider. The one thing I will say, you know, positive about Lee Vino, he got Chris Kreider to improve his game. Chris Kreider is a great net front presence. And you look at the way Chris Kreider plays, he can tip in shots, he can screen goalies out. He's tougher. He's definitely tougher to move. He knows his role. And he's got 8 goals and he's been performing very well. And also a credit to Lee Vino for Kevin Hayes' improvement as well. Kevin Hayes, he turned him into a shutdown center last year. And you know what? There was a lot of success with that. Kevin Hayes is an excellent 5-on-5 hockey player. He's smart. He may not have the production, you know, production so far, 3 goals, 8 assists, 11 points, but he's been coming. He usually wins more faceoffs than he loses. Can play penalty kill, can play power play. Great puck possession player. And he's going to make a case to stay. Now, I don't know what the decision's going to be. I mean, you know, if you hope that he continues to produce, and if they get the offer they think they can get, if it's from Winnipeg, still needs that second line center, you know, because they haven't replaced Paul Stastny. They're going to need a second line center. If they can get that kind of value, then yeah, then I guess they're going to trade him, because he's going to get between 6.5. He could be getting 6.5 to 7 million. Be a two-way center. I mean, he could be getting Ryan Robinson, and Ryan Robinson's a better player. But Kevin Hayes is a very improved player and a guy who's been very consistent. He's been their most consistent skater, you know, even though Sabanajit's got more points, Kreider's got more points. But I really like Kevin Hayes. I like what he brings. I like his attitude as well. You can see that he's worked very hard on his game. So, all that being said, Hedl was able to get the rebound and pounce because Kreider screened in front on the Pionk rebound, and he scored that first goal, and that was a great feeling for him. He played very well after that, nearly scored a second goal on a chance, also created a couple of viral opportunities for some of his teammates. And Filip Hedl is a guy that's going to be bumped up with Pavel Buchnevich out. So Hedl, the coach is going to have to find a way to keep Hedl in his top 6. You know, that makes the most sense because Hedl's got the kind of skill. So Matt Zuccarello is returning for tomorrow's game after missing 3 games with the groin problem, a groin issue. Matt Zuccarello is not going to play on the Mika Zibanejad line. What they will do, actually, he is going to play on the Zibanejad. What they were going to do, as much as I like Nemesnikov of Zibanejad, and he's there, therefore his chemistry there, and Nemesnikov's a complimentary guy. So Nemesnikov is going to get moved to the Kevin Hayes line. So he'll be playing with Hayes and Kreider as the complement. And I think that's a good compliment to have, because I think Nemesnikov's improved a lot. You see him more involved. You see him more active, noticeable. And I think he's got good speed, and he's gotten a lot of chances. He could have a few goals, which never certainly created some chances for him. He was stolen a couple of times in tight. But Nemesnikov's really, he's definitely picked it up. And so your top line will be Mika Zibanejad with Filippito and Zuccarello. So they'll start that way in Brooklyn when they take on their kryptonite, the New York Islanders, because they never beat the Islanders. I'm hoping that will change this year. They're going to be head-to-head four times, and this is the first of kind of a split home-to-home, home-at-home, because the two teams, well, at least the Rangers, at least will be playing over the weekend, and then New York Islanders will come to MSG next week. So a little bit of a nice little split-up, a little home-at-home series with New York Islanders, and that's what you like. You know, that's what you want. You want your rivals to – you want to have those home-home series, and but I'd like to see the Rangers have success against New York Islanders, who also are a little improved as well. Barry Trotz doing a nice job. Yes, they are kind of – they had taken a step before they were able to get a nice 5-2 comfortable win against the Canucks. The Rangers may have taken something out of them because the Canucks were playing in second of a back-to-back. But Cal Clutterbuck finally finding the net after a 52-game drought. And you know Cal Clutterbuck would have scored anyway on Thursday if he didn't score against the Canucks. So maybe that's a good omen for the Rangers. Maybe he won't score. Maybe he actually won't find the back of the net when they visit Brooklyn at Barclays Center later tonight. So we'll have to see how that goes. Barzal's only got 2 goals, but he does have 13 assists. I like to see Barzal pick it up in the goal department, although maybe not tonight. You could score a goal, but I want the Rangers to win the game. I've talked about a few players that have certainly made improvements under David Quinn, and he gets a lot of credit for that. It will be Elias Andersson centering the fourth line. So Elias Andersson stays in the lineup, but he goes from playing with Kevin Hayes and Chris Kreider. And he'll center the fourth line with Cody McLeod, who will stay in because it's a rivalry game. And there could be a fight or a scrap, and you definitely could use him in there. So he'll center that fourth line. Video Terrell will anchor, will be on the right side. And Ryan Spooner, who right now is a very huge disappointment of only 2 points, and that's just he's the one guy who has not responded, and he's a healthy scratch. Frederick Claesson will probably stay in. I would have to think Brendan Smith sits again. Although, if he does bring Brendan Smith back, you could bring Brendan Smith back for this kind of game because it's a rivalry game. Brendan Smith's tough, and he gives you that little edge. So I don't know if the Colts will change his mind on that, but Smith's got off to a good start. He struggled lately, and now he's sat out the last couple of games. Frederick Claesson's done nothing wrong to be benched, but we'll have to see. But I could see Brendan Smith being in as part of this rivalry game. Well, if it's not tonight, maybe it's the second one. The Rangers also have the Dallas Stars coming up before the break for the early Thanksgiving next Tuesday. That's a game that I'll actually attend with JNF, Justin Felix, and his buddy Mike Franzone. So we'll be at the Dallas Stars game. But you have to like what they're certainly have been able to do. Yeah, they're finding ways to win, and Eric Lundqvist deserves a lot of credit. So does Alexander Georgiev, or Georgie, as they call him. He hasn't started a lot, but I'll tell you what. He's a game. I'll tell you, he really is a gamer. And some of this, he made some really huge saves over the weekend in their win. And I really like the attitude of this 22-year-old. He just seems like a winner. He stays focused and he makes the saves. And full credit to him. But Lundqvist has certainly been terrific. It's 2.54 GAA. He is now tied 437 wins, ties Jacques Plante, seventh all time on the wins list. So the next win will make him sixth. He'll take over sixth. Then he could chase down Terry Sawchuk. He's got a 923 save percentage. Those are nice shutouts. It's very tough to get shutouts for Lundqvist the last couple of years. But I'll tell you what, Lundqvist has been very focused. He's given them a chance to win every game, and so has Alex Gorgiev, the exception of a couple of games for these two guys. And defense has been better, but they haven't been great. It's just about finding that consistency, and they are a young team, and there are going to be peaks and valleys. I think Mark Stahl has given them some really good play as well. And he's pairing up with Neil Pionk, and they're getting matchups, and Pionk gets pinned in a lot. Stahl's the perfect guy to have if you're pinned in, because Stahl wins most of his physical battles. Nobody gives Mark Stahl credit. Everybody just points to when Stahl makes a mistake and it winds up in the back of their net. But Mark Stahl, he wins physical battles. He plays with edge. And I think he's a perfect partner for Neil Pionk. And that's why they're together. And Stahl, nobody gives him credit, but I'll tell you what, he plays the game tough. He doesn't back down from anybody. That's another thing I like about David Quinn. Once there was that hit by Eric Gribble in the preseason in the Devils Rangers game, he was upset that there was no response. So what happened? There was a response in the next game. I think it was Cody that fought Gribble in the next Rangers-Devils preseason game, and they haven't faced the regular season, and that was that. And, this team, they may not be the toughest team, but these players, they are more together. They're communicating with Tyler. You're seeing a lot more of that on the ice, and you're seeing team toughness. These guys will stand up for each other. Even Pionk will go back. They're going to let players know. They're letting players know. When they don't like something, they're going to let people know about it. And I like that. And that's something that you didn't have under Alain Vigneault. Alain Vigneault was turning over cheek, and they played boring hockey, and it was vanilla, and eventually it got tame. And under David Quinn, everybody's accountable. He wants his players to be together and respond. And that's what you need. That's exactly what you need. It doesn't have to be a fight every time. It could be a hit. It could be a scrum. You gotta let the opponents know when you don't like something. That's one big positive when I think about David Quinn, what he's been able to do so far. And that's why the New York Rangers are 9-7-2, and they have 20 points, and they are going to be visiting the Islanders. And yeah, the Islanders have more guys with capability. They have some guys with capability, like Barzal, like Eberle, like the very, very surprising Brock Nelson with the goals, centering, replacing Tavares, and playing with Anders Lee and Josh Bailey, who was so underrated when you talk about the assists and how he plays the game. And of course, there's fourth line, one of the best fourth lines in hockey, with Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck and Matt Martin, who's out right now. So, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's a rivalry, and it'll be interesting to see. I'll be very curious to see, which goalie will Barry Trotz go with? Will he stick with Thomas Greiss, who just gave him a real good outing again in a win over the Canucks? Or does he go to Robin Lehner? So that's a good question. It's a real good question. When you talk about what they'll do. But if the Rangers are going to come out with the victory, look, they're going to have to start quick, because whenever they play the Islanders is a team that always starts out quick. They get the early goal, and the Rangers are playing catch up, and that can't happen. And if they do fall behind early, they have to respond and get the game tie, and they got to forecheck the Islanders, who allow a lot of shots. They allow more shots than the New York Rangers. Go and look it up. The Islanders give up a lot of shots, so they have to take the forecheck to them. So that's what I'm going to say about that. So I'm looking forward to it. but I'm guarded because every time we play the Islanders, it's the Islanders Stanley Cup. It's their Stanley Cup, and they always outplay us. So I'm hoping that things will be a little different, and I'm excited about it. So I'll be writing a little preview about that on NewYorkPuck.com, and we'll see what happens. Finally, I do want to wrap up with the Knicks. I'm not going to, you know, do too much here. I'll keep this short. I'll keep it sweet. The Knicks are a young team. We understand that. The Knicks showed some promise. They have shown some promise early in the season, earlier. Played a lot of games, all right? They played maybe 15 games. They're four. What do they got? Four wins? They're 4-11. They played 15 games. They're 4-11. And they've lost like four in a row. They're not playing good at all. They played the Raptors tough. And then the last two games have just been awful. 128-101 at OKC. They were never competitive. No Russell Westbrook, who missed it against fifth straight game. Paul George with 35 points. You got Tim Hardaway Jr. fouling George on a three for a four-point play. Tim Hardaway Jr. is averaging 24 points a game. So he's certainly performing. But I have to look at some of the younger Knicks, and I understand what David Fisdale's deal with. That's why he's mixing up his lineups. He's trying to give everybody an opportunity here. I took Frank Nicolina out of the starting lineup and decided to go with the other guy who they picked up last year from Denver, who I can't think of at the moment. Apologies. Boudier. That's right, Emmanuel Moudier. Yeah, he's still trying to figure things out, and so you're seeing him try to go with different lineups. Especially, of course, seeing as still not around. Cantor coming off the bench, still providing doubles, even though he's not good defensively, but he's an automatic double-double. We certainly have seen some good things from a couple of players. The kid from Arizona, Lonzo Trier, I knew he was good. But the only reason he didn't get drafted was, that, of course, the suspensions with the PEDs. And, teams just wanted to stay away. And they were like, why should we draft this guy? And there are some red flags. And if you don't draft him and then he makes your team, you're saving money, And he makes your team and it's cheaper. And you watch the way Alonzo Trier plays. And this guy is a scorer. This guy could score. He could create his own shot. He makes tough shots. He can hit that step back. He drives the ball. He's aggressive going to the basket. You're seeing why. You're seeing why he's become a rotation player for the Knicks. And he's been the most impressive rookie so far. Yes, he's been more impressive than Kevin Knox, who I still expect big things from. And I know Kevin Knox had a couple of injuries, a couple of setbacks, and that's part of it. But he's been the most impressive. Who else has been impressive? The other kid. Robinson has been impressive as well. So, when I look at it, and I understand that he needs to work on being more, Mitchell Robinson, he needs to be more disciplined when it comes to not fouling. It was 128-103, by the way, but I don't know how I stayed with this, but it'll come for him. Dotson's another guy. He didn't even play under Hornacek. Dotson could really shoot the ball. When he came off the bench, had a tough game. Hazonia, you could see why Hazonia struggled with Orlando, why he didn't get consistent minutes. Because sometimes he can play very well and make shots and stretches and drive the ball. And other times, he's just chucking his balls off. And he needs to be a little more consistent and find that consistency. This is not a first year or second year pro. This is a fourth year pro. He needs to figure out that consistency. As I said, Nicolina, he had a very bad game last time out, so he comes off the bench and struggles defensively. You know what you're going to get from him. He has worked a little bit on that 3-point shot, but it's really about these guys finding more consistency. And look, they are very young. There's only a couple veterans. Vonleh certainly rebounds the ball pretty well. Yeah, but this is a young team, a young roster, and they're going to get some bruises. And right now they're going through some real tough bruises. And I don't know how bad it's going to be, but remember what I talked about? Well, I thought maybe this team could actually go over that 29.5 and win the 30 games. Well, wrong again, Derek. I mean, they're going to struggle, and it's going to be tough. And I don't know when we're going to see another win. They're going to be at the Pelicans. That's their next game. They're 13th in the Eastern. They got the Magic on Sunday in Orlando. Then they got the Blazers coming to New York City. And the Blazers are an improved team. So that's going to do it for this abbreviated podcast. You know, the next podcast I do, I'm going to talk about Eli Manning and the throwback performance that he had on Monday Night Football and its 49ers. And I felt really good for him. So I'm ending with on the positive that it's nice to see Eli get that fourth quarter comeback and the Giants pull out that game there against the 49ers, 27-23. I'll talk a little more about that. I'll talk about the Giants on the next podcast, along with Odell Beckham being positive and maybe not being as bad as everybody, even including me, thinks that he is. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk a little more about the baseball winter, what the Yankees should do, and maybe we'll talk about Manny Machado, why I'm not so high on him, and Bryce Harper, and I don't know what's going to happen with the hot stove. We'll talk about that. And the next time, you know, we do a podcast, we should know who our MVP, most valuable players are. I'll talk about that. And the rookie of the years, yeah, I will get to that as well. Ohtani winning by a landslide over Miguel Andujar, which I thought was a joke. And I'll explain why I thought Ohtani deserved to win, but why I just could not believe the vote breakdown, just like I couldn't believe that so many people voted Verlander over Blake Snell. So that's going to do it for this podcast edition. If you listened to it, thank you. If you didn't, it's okay. We're getting back into it. So tune into the Hard Hits Network, and I got you covered. All right? Y'all be good. Y'all enjoy the rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you all later tonight. And maybe we'll even have one of my co-hosts, Mr. Gianorio, as well, so we could get into some hot debates about Mike D'Antoni and the whole Carmelo Anthony situation, which reeks. Reeks like what happened to Stephon Marbury. But that's later on. So that's going to do it. A couple of things here, and then I'll see you later. Peace.